Good afternoon and welcome everyone to today's Internet Seminar. This is a Small Business Funding Opportunities SBIR-STTR for Environmental Technologies at NIEHS, SRP, EPA, and NSF webinar. This webinar is sponsored by the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences Superfund Research Program, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and the National Science Foundation. My name is Kirsten Meese. I'm a contractor supporting the SBIR-STTR program at the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences as a program analyst. I will be moderating today's session. Let's begin our seminar. We will go over the purpose of the webinar. There will be an introduction. Then we will go into the agency presentations. We will then provide you with additional resources such as a summary of environmental technology funding in agencies and institutes and our SBIR Top 10 Keys to Success, followed by an extensive Q&A session. The purpose of today's seminar is one-stop shopping for U.S.-owned small-operated businesses applicants with environmental technologies. There are many different agencies that support environmental technologies. Some are here today. It is sometimes confusing to know where the best fit for your environmental tech is within the SBIR programs. We did tailor this to the Clue-In audience, and we will have an overview of the NIEHS, SRP, NSF, and EPA Environmental Technologies, SBIR-STTR programs. You will also have direct access to the SBIR-STTR points of contact to answer your questions, which will be after the presentations. The SBIR-STTR program is comprised of three phases. Phase one is the proof of concept stage. You establish technical merit and feasibility. In phase two, you continue R&D into your product into a state that can be field deployable. And in phase three, you pursue commercialization objectives. SBIR stands for Small Business Innovation Research. Companies that qualify for this are for-profit, U.S.-owned and operated, and less than 500 employees. STTR stands for Small Business Technology Transfer. It is for small businesses that pair with a nonprofit research institution, which is typically a university. SBIR and STTR have different requirements on the portion of work that needs to be conducted. With SBIR, 67% of the work needs to be conducted by the small business in phase one. With STTR, phase one, the small business is responsible for 40% of the work, and the research institution is required to do 30% of the work, where the remaining 30% can be conducted either by the small business, research institution, or a third party. Next, I will review some of the SBIR program history. The program began in 1976. It was initiated at NSF to support small businesses. It provided early-stage financial support for high-risk technologies with commercial potential. In 1982, Congress passed the Small Business Innovation Development Act. Today, we have 11 federal agencies that support SBIR. You are learning about three of those agencies today, which is the NIEHS, EPA, and NSF. Five federal agencies support STTR. What distinguishes the difference is based on agency extramural budget. Federal agencies that support SBIR have an extramural budget greater than $100 million. Federal agencies with an extramural budget greater than $1 billion have an STTR program, which includes NIEHS and NSF, but not EPA. Here in the chart are the required allocations, which are by federal mandate through 2017. Please note that in 2015, it is a minimum of 2.9% for SBIR and 0.4% for STTR out of the extramural budgets of the agencies that fund these programs. Interesting facts about the SBIR program include, in fiscal year 2011, there were over $2.5 billion awarded to small businesses. It has been estimated that SBIR funding produces an average of 7 patents per day. This is a really interesting fact considering that 7 patents per day is more than all U.S. universities combined. SBIR-STTR, what we fund. We fund technologies that are high risk, high payoff. We are looking for projects that are highly innovative. We are looking for technologies that are disruptive and not iterative changes. We are also looking for technologies that are commercially viable. Commercially viable does not necessarily mean big dollars, but it does mean a significant market. And what we want the fund is driven to have a high impact on society, and specific to today's seminar, is also impactful for the environment. Now, I would like to introduce you to Heather Henry. Since 2006, Heather Henry has been a program administrator for the Superfund Research Program at the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences in Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. Her responsibilities include administration of the SRP Multi-Project Center Grants, which are P42s, the SRP Individual Research Project Grants, which are R01s, and the Small Business Technology Transfer Grants, R41s, 42s, R43, and R44 grants. She earned a BS in the Biological Sciences, Ecology, and Evolution at the University of Rochester. She has a PhD in Biological Sciences from the University of Cincinnati and completed a Fulbright Fellowship postdoctoral at the University of Melbourne and the University of Adelaide in Australia. Heather?
Hi, thank you, Kirsten. So to start with, I wanted to tell our attendees a little bit about the NIEHS Superfund Research Program. So I'll tell you a little bit about where we fit in the U.S. government. We're a part of the National Institutes of Health, and the NIH has a fundamental research mission to understand health outcomes, primarily for human health. There are 27 institutes within the NIH, one of which is the NIEHS, the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. At the NIEHS, we look at toxicology, epidemiology, genetics, and research such as that, omics research, and use this to understand the human health outcomes that are impacted by primarily environmental exposures. Now, in the 1980s, the Superfund Amendment Reauthorization Act was formed. That was the act that formed the Superfund Research Program. The Superfund Research Program was housed within NIEHS. It expands the mission of NIEHS to a certain extent to include not only the health and risk assessment portion, but also remediation and detection technologies. So basically, the research extends just beyond human health and includes environmental research as well, again, such as the remediation and detection technologies. So the detection technologies and remediation technologies are what the Superfund Research Program funds through its SBIR and STTR grant programs. And listed here are the grant mechanism numbers, R41, R42, 43, and 44, for the Phase 1 and Phase 2 SBIR grants. Our roots within the Superfund Amendment Reauthorization Act has us work very closely with our other Superfund agencies, and that's the EPA and ATSDR. So what I would like to do next is show you some of the topic areas of interest for the SBIR program within the Superfund Research Program. These are posted and are linked to from the web page that is provided at the bottom of this slide. They are also linked from the request for applications that are currently open for investigator-initiated research, and I will show a link to that a little bit later. These are just ideas about the types of monitoring activities and remediation technologies that we are looking for. And again, these are just ideas that you are welcome to contact me if you have questions and see if the kind of research that you're working on has a fit for our research program. I'm happy to discuss your research interests are, and help you, if we can, get them in line with our target research needs. So you will see a list on this slide as well. This is just continued on our topics of interest. The full list is provided in the NIEHS SBIR STTR topics list, and they will be modified in May, but this will maintain the same basic areas of research. And these are the areas that have been identified by our Superfund EPA and ATSDR stakeholders as opportunities for small businesses to interact with environmental remediation and environmental detection technologies. I want to make a caveat that it is not required to do work on a Superfund site. In fact, sometimes it is difficult for researchers to get access to Superfund sites because there can be a lot of hurdles to jump through. We find that researchers and small business investigators do find ways to work on other types of hazardous waste sites, but we do want to make the point that it is not a requirement for you to do site work in order to apply for one of our grants. It is great to show that you have the capability to be working on real sites, however, and reviewers certainly appreciate that. We get a lot of questions about applicants who are coming in for technologies related to biological pathogens in the environment, and we wanted to use this opportunity to let people know that the NIEHS does not fund work addressing pathogens in the environment. In addition, our SARA legislation does not permit us to do research in petroleum. So now I would like to switch gears and tell you a little bit about the application process. Right now we have two open solicitations for NIH and other parts of HHS, CDC, and FDA. I've provided links for the current solicitations, and you can find details about the application forms, the page limits, and all the requirements for your application within those links. As well, a full list of topics, not only from our institute at NIEHS, but all of the interests for HHS is provided in those forms. So in the upper corner, I show the due dates for these applications. April 5th is the next one. After that, it will be September 5th. And from then on, January 5th, April 5th, September 5th. There are other types of NIEHS, SBIR, and STTR topics that relate specifically to human health as well as educational materials. If any of these topics are of interest to you, I would encourage you to get in touch with me, and I'll be happy to put you in touch with the right contacts for these grant programs. When you are applying for a grant within the NIEHS Small Business Program, it takes about 6 to 8 weeks for the entire registration process. So that's just getting your company registered so that you can apply. So I have listed the steps involved as well as a link that gives you information on how to apply. This is very important that you allow yourself enough time to make sure that you are fully registered in order to have the opportunity to apply for a grant. So next I will talk about budgets. A phase one is up to $150,000 total cost for about 6 months for the SBIR and up to 1 year for an STTR. Phase two is about $1 million over 2 years. There is such thing as a fast track where you can combine phase one and phase two. I want to let the audience know that we do not do phase three or phase 2Bs within the NIEHS at this point. And just to let you know a little about the review process. The first step, applications are received. We make the call about relevance. We decide if it is related enough to Superfund to be a part of that of our grant process. Then it goes to an NIH panel for review. The review includes detection, remediation, biomedical devices, biomedical engineering applications. After that, the applications are scored, and they go to the secondary review, which is the NAEHS Council review. Their job is to concur with the results of the peer review. All in all, this is about a 6-month process from the time of submission to the time of the earliest awards being made. So I want to list what we use as the scores. These are listed in the program announcement, and this is what your application will be scored based on these criteria: significance, investigators, innovation, approach, and environment. There are also additional other considerations, such as biohazards and chemical safety. So I've listed what the scoring points mean. Your initial score is on a 1 to 9 scale, and the final score will be between 10 and 90. The scores are released within 3 to 4 days of the review. In addition, there is a written critique that is sent several weeks after the review, and that is useful for you if you decide to resubmit your applications. The study sections are within each study section, there are 3 reviewers that are assigned to your application, and I just want to make the point that within the study section, there is a very wide scope of expertise. And in fact, a majority of the people in the room are not going to be environmental technologists. So I just want to really emphasize how important it is to explain the significance of your project and to not assume that all the reviewers in the room understand how important the environmental exposures are that you are working on. It just may not be their area of expertise. Also, having preliminary data along with your fundamental science is very important. In terms of expectations, it is good to convince the reviewers that the market exists. Sometimes that relates to being sure that they understand how important the significance is. In other words, how many sites might be impacted by the type of contaminant that you're proposing to remediate. This gives an idea of the market. So I would even say that for a phase one applicant, having a hint of your commercialization plan is a really good strategy. I have listed at the bottom of this slide the review section that our applications typically go to. And you can have a look at that review group and get a better idea of the composition of the scientific expertise within this group. So lastly, I have the timeline that I mentioned before. It's about 6 to 7 months from the time of application to award. At the very early stages, you are welcome to contact me and ask questions about the relevancy of your research. We do this all the time, and it's our job. At this time, I would like to pass it back to Kirsten for our next speaker. Thank you.
Thank you for that comprehensive overview, Heather. Just a note for our participants today, the application process that Heather described is not just applicable to NIHS, but to all 27 institutes that make up the NIH. I would now like to introduce April Richards. April is the program manager of the Small Business Innovation Research SBIR program for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. The EPA's SBIR program focuses on developing and commercializing innovative technologies that address the agency's mission of protecting human health and the environment. EPA topic areas include air and climate, water, green manufacturing, and homeland security. April has worked as a fellow on the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, where she provided technical expertise on environmental issues. She worked for 5 years in private industry with an environmental engineering consulting firm in Florida, primarily in the area of drinking water treatment. She has a master's degree in civil environmental engineering and is a professional engineer. April?
Thanks. Welcome, everyone. I am April Richards, and I'm the program director for the SBIR program. I will give you an overview of our program and what priorities we have and how the process works. EPA has a fairly simple mission. It is to protect human health and the environment. Through our SBIR program, we are looking to develop technologies that will help us meet this mission. That is our overarching goal and everything that we select for funding. Saving the planet does not come with a huge budget. Our budget is about $4.2 million this year. Like all programs, we do award projects in a phased approach. We gave phase one, which is proof of concept, and in our case, $100,000 for 6 months. Phase two is to develop and commercialize the technology, and we provide $300,000. Award amounts are slightly less than other agencies. We do have what we call a commercialization option. It is a supplement of money that you can get if you have third-party investment in your technology. So you could get a total of $500,000 for your phase one and phase two project combined if successful. We do award contracts, and therefore that makes the process a little different than other agencies. Another thing that EPA does that is helpful is we do provide commercialization assistance to all our phase one and phase two companies. We have a contractor that does that, and that is their area of expertise. They have a lot of good people in the environmental arena that can help you figure out targets and markets and how to move your technology towards commercialization. We do one solicitation per year, and we are working on that right now. We want it to be open in the spring, and our target is currently the middle of May. This is a link to our homepage. You can also just Google EPA SBIR, and it will take you straight to the homepage. The other link on this page is an example of what we fund. It is a link to the latest press release, and it will give you a flavor for the types of projects that we fund. We are working on this year's topics. That would be the 2015 topics, and so I can't really talk about those right now, but I will tell you about the 2014 topics, and there will be some similarity and carryover from last year, although some things still might change. This is a pretty good idea of what is coming up. These are all EPA priorities. We gather these from across the agency. You can see we have air and climate change. This year we had a prevention topic and a control topic under climate. We have a manufacturing topic, looking at things, looking at greening manufacturing process. We want efficient ways to manufacture things to prevent pollution, use better feedstocks, and prevent emissions. We have a toxic chemical topic, and we are looking to get rid of these toxic chemicals from products and materials. Water is another topic. This year we had a wastewater topic and a drinking water topic. We had a building materials topic, looking at, again, at materials and reuse and recycling. We had a food waste topic, which was a new area, and it was because it was raised as a priority area for EPA. EPA also does some homeland security work. We have responsibilities for the nation's drinking water systems, water security, and responsibility for decontamination in case of an event. That topic might switch back to the decontamination topic this year. This is an overview of what we did last year, looking at the life cycle of the entire technology. We really want these technologies to have maximum environmental impact. So we consider energy use, water use, pollution, everything that goes into making of technology. We really want to spend our small budget wisely and fund things that have large environmental impact. I did want to let you know we are finally using electronic submission for our proposals. We are using FedConnect. All submissions are electronic, which is good news. It does come with an added registration. You really should start early when you want to apply. Make sure you have the registrations complete. I don't think it's that hard. It is just something else that you have to do. So I have listed the four registrations that you need in order to apply with EPA. The SBA company registry, you have to register with the SBA, SAM, and FedConnect. And to go over how the EPA does proposal review, we have a two-stage review process. We have an external peer review and an internal programmatic review. For phase one proposals, we do the review and looking at five different criteria. Sort of the same things that NIEH is looking for. We want something that is groundbreaking. We want to see management and technical capabilities in the team. We want to make sure you have the business and the technical angle covered. And we really do care about the life cycle. You don't have to do a formal life cycle analysis, but we want you to consider all components of the life cycle when you submit the proposal. We want the proposal to be technically sound and show commercial potential. Even in phase one, we have a commercialization plan. We want to know things like, what is your price point? Who else would use this? Does someone really want this? Those proposals that get excellent and very good ratings advance, if you are lower than that, you will not be considered for funding. The composition of the panel will be according to which topic you submit. If you submit a manufacturing topic, we will have a panel of manufacturing experts, both with technical and commercial expertise. Same thing if you submit a water proposal, we will have water experts. They will be in your area of expertise and will rate your proposal accordingly. Again, if you pass with an excellent or very good rating, we take those proposals and have a group of experts that will look at the proposals internally. We will look at how EPA will invest our money to best meet the EPA needs. We are looking at how it addresses EPA priorities, how significant the environmental benefits are, and how broad the technology could be used. For our timeline, we take a while to make awards. We are looking to have our solicitation open in the spring, hopefully next month. We do the peer review and then relevancy review, and then we will make awards early next year. The two-stage review process helps us select the best proposals, although it adds time to our timeline. So I think that is
I think that your application, your talk really speaks to, you know, applicants and why they need to make sure they're selecting the correct agency, and when they're doing their applications, to make sure that they're considering the review criteria, which can be different between the agencies, which we saw between NIHS and EPA so far.
Definitely.
So next we have Prakash Balan. Prakash joined the Small Business Innovation Research Program at NSF in 2011. He joined as a program director leading the Chemical Environmental Technology funding focus. He has over 20 years of broad experience spanning R&D, new technology development, and commercialization in both large and small entrepreneurial company environments. After a career with ARCO Chemical and Lyondell Chemical Company, where he led innovation with several chemical technologies and was recognized for his significant contributions, he co-founded two successful companies, first an environmental engineering technology company and thereafter a biofuels company. Prakash holds a PhD in chemical engineering from the Pennsylvania State University. Prakash?
Thank you, Kirsten. Just want to make sure that the volume is okay.
Yes, it is.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon, folks. Glad that you've been able to join us today. We've had a very strong turnout, and it's terrific that you could spend your afternoon with us to learn about what's available within our respective agencies. As Kirsten mentioned, I manage the broad portfolio within the National Science Foundation SBIR-STTR program in the environmental technologies and chemical technology space. I just want to give you a quick overview of the National Science Foundation. It was created right after World War II in 1950 with the primary mission of supporting discovery research in any and all areas of science and engineering, also in the field of education, and also to secure the national defense. So NSF's mandate is extraordinarily broad, and as a result, we really don't have any specific single point of focus, but we just want to be an extraordinarily broad net that anyone with great ideas can go to and start a dialogue and potentially pursue funding opportunities. NSF has a $7.3 billion budget. And out of that large budget, which most of that money is devoted to discovery research activities, $177 million is set aside for the SBIR-STTR Small Business Program. Overall, NSF roughly contributes about 20% of all federally funded research dollars, and it does impact an extraordinarily broad universe of individuals, 320,000 researchers, postdocs, trainees, teachers, students, and that includes all the PIs in small businesses that we fund. And over the years, the investments in research have paid off in numerous ways. We have supported 214 Nobel laureates since 1950, and many innovations that you see in everyday life have begun at the National Science Foundation through some initial research work, both on the academic side as well as the SBIR-STTR program. I wanted to touch upon the structure of the NSF SBIR-STTR program briefly. So that $177 million is not specifically allocated to any budget topic. In keeping with our interest in being a landing zone for all great ideas, we really don't allocate funds from that $177 million into specific funding buckets. It all really depends on what the incoming quality of proposals are and which parts of the economy are accelerating, which parts of the community, what the community out there and the marketplace out there is telling us are the emerging new technology spaces that should be funded. So you are in the driver's seat in every way in pursuing your great ideas and innovations. In many ways, our program is a heavily crowdsourced idea-based system. You, the public, you're telling NSF your ideas, you're selling those ideas to us, and we are primarily a funding catalyst for great ideas. So we have split up into a multi-phase program, just like the EPA and the NIH and other agencies. We have a phase one program, which is focused on technology proof of concept. We give grants, not contracts. These are fixed price grants. And the way that works is you get when you get an award, there's a fixed sum of money, and we can't give you more money than what we have awarded you. So we expect that you can use that money and get the work done. For SBIR, we provide phase one awards for $150,000. For SDTR, it's $225,000. SBIR grants are 6-month grants, and SDTR is 1 year. We do have additional R&D funds available for phase one grantees. If you have commercial events that occur which provide further validation of your technology value proposition. So for instance, if you might have someone who wants to invest in your firm because of the work that you've done with the NSF award, or you might have a customer who might be your first sale. They might be writing their first purchase order, or you might receive some additional state funding, which is a direct consequence of your NSF-funded phase one work. So long as that causality, that the third-party funds are a direct consequence of your NSF-funded work, can be established, we would then evaluate what it is you want to do in terms of additional R&D and then award grantees with potentially more money. The additional monies would not exceed 20% of your phase one award amount. We have a phase two program that's available only to phase one awardees. So if you get a phase one award from NSF, you are welcome to submit a phase two proposal. And phase two is a substantially larger sum of money. It is $750,000 for a two-year program for both SBIR and SDTR. And just like in phase one, where we provide some additional R&D funds, we do have numerous additional funding opportunities available to phase two grantees. It's a very rich menu that covers commercial partnerships, institutional research partnerships. You can bring in students, you can bring in teachers, you can work with minority colleges, you can work with community colleges. We will really help you get your job done through a variety of ways and accelerate your innovation into the marketplace and bring a very broad cross-section of people into your program, all driven by your specific needs and your specific focus on accelerating towards the marketplace. Now, once you finish phase two, we really don't have any additional funding for phase three. In many ways, that's the time when we are hoping to see a success story in the local newspaper or a national newspaper, see you on TV perhaps, and hear about your successes. So that's phase three for NSF. We hope you will grow and succeed. So the NSF innovation model on one chart is basically this. Phase one, phase two, an unfunded phase three. Just wanted to mention that the specifics of the phase 1B and the phase 2B program that I touched upon before. Phase 1B provides a 50% match of third-party qualifying funds, and phase 2B can be a 50% match all the way up to $500,000. All the NSF money can only be used for research and development activity. It has to be technical work that the money is used for. So, topics. You know, this is an item of internal debate. You know, do we just say all great ideas are welcome on our solicitation? Well, if we did that, it would be very hard for NSF to be found through a Google search. So we do have topics. But keep in mind, these are just conversation starters. The program is run by 9 program directors, and I have listed on this slide all their topics, their names and contact information. Keep in mind that we are very broad-minded to completely rewriting this list of topics if we feel the need to, and if there is a strong societal and market-driven need for that. So these topics are just starters. So So don't feel that you need to fit the topic. The point is the topic should fit you. That's the key. Your innovation drives the full conversation. So just keep that in mind. Don't ever feel constrained from that standpoint. In fact, if you're not sure, and if you have a proposal in any one space, and you're not quite sure that that person's the right person to talk to, you can talk to anybody on this list. And we'll find the right person that you should talk to and get some feedback on. I just want to quickly focus on the chemical and environmental technology space. These keywords on the slide are listed in our current solicitation. I'll present that information a little later. But as you can see, we cover an extraordinarily broad spectrum of technology areas in the chemical and environmental technology space. So again, keep in mind, if you have an innovation that you believe has tremendous market impact, tremendous societal impact, it's going to be beneficial to the environment, it's going to cause a lower environmental impact on the planet, pick up the phone, send us an email, get the conversation started. We want to hear your ideas. Now, in terms of getting your ideas discussed and evaluated, what you should consider doing is create a short 2-page document. In that document, try to describe your company, your team strengths, talk about the market opportunity that you see. Why does the market care about your idea? Who in the marketplace cares about your idea? What's your value proposition? Who might your initial customers be? Who have you talked to? I would refrain from being theoretical, where you say, I believe X, Y, and Z will be excited about my technology. It would be better if you actually go talk to those people and come back and say, yes, they have indicated for all these reasons that they have a significant amount of pain, and my innovation is going to address that. That puts you in a much stronger position, even in that initial conversation. Talk about your technology. Talk about the innovation in your technology. Describe your competition. We do not ever see proposals which have no competition. Every great idea has competitors, and don't ignore that fact. If you don't have competition, you may have not looked hard enough. So please talk about your competition and try to understand what's in the patents, what's out there that may stand against you, and present a comprehensive picture. And also talk about a research outline. What are you going to use NSF funding for? What specific research tasks do you want to execute in a 6-month period to answer the key question that you plan on submitting as a proposal? So once you send us that, we can look at that. And typically, we will respond in a matter of days. Now, as it gets closer to the solicitation deadline, our response might be delayed. Now, if you don't hear from us, let's say you send us an email and you don't hear from us in 2 or 3 days or 5 days, don't hesitate to send us another email. We do get a very high volume of incoming emails, and it could be that your email got buried in that incoming list. So please do not hesitate to send us the email more than once if you don't receive a quick response. So how do you apply? This slide has several useful links to information on the NSF website. We currently have an open solicitation for the SBIR and the STTR proposals. The SBIR deadline is June 16th, and the STTR deadline is June 18th. I have one suggestion for all of you. Try to make sure that you submit your proposals before the deadline. Don't try to get it in the last hour, in the last 5 minutes. As you all know, you might have an internet problem, your computer might crash, things might happen, so just give yourself a little leeway there and try to submit your proposal maybe a day earlier, just in case things go wrong. At the very bottom of this slide, we have a link to the Funding Topics website. So that's the web page that will give you all the different areas that I put on the previous slide, one of the previous slides with all the program director names. All those topics are covered on this website, And then you can drill down to the chemicals and environmental technology space and look through all the list of topics. And again, if you don't see anything specific, don't hesitate to contact us anyway. Just as Heather and April mentioned, we do also have required registrations. And this slide gives you a list of all those registrations. Please allow some time to make sure that the registrations are done and complete. And if you're trying something and you're getting ready to submit your proposal and you're having trouble, again, don't hesitate to send us an email saying, I'm having trouble with Fastlane system, or I'm having trouble getting my registration complete on one of those other websites. It's always a good idea to let us know that you're experiencing some difficulties. We might have some suggestions along the way on things you could try, and might even suggest under certain circumstances that you go ahead and submit your proposal. But make sure you get something in writing from NSF if your submission is incomplete for reasons that are beyond your control. We would be happy to work with you on a case-by-case basis. Okay, so proposal evaluation selection. We have a four-stage process. The initial step is the application step. Even before that, start talking to us. Send us your idea on a two-pager. Once you submit your formal proposal through the NSF Fastlane website, we will put it through external peer merit review. That process, once that is completed, we go through an extensive due diligence process, at which point we will make some decisions on each proposal on what might be the next steps, and it'll feed into the overall decision of whether the proposal gets awarded or declined. The process is very competitive. We get about 1,500 to 2,000 phase one proposals annually, and about 15% of proposals might get funded. Now, as I said before, phase one awardees can come back for a phase two proposal review, and based on historical statistics, roughly about 40% of the phase one companies may make it all the way to phase two funding. Again, don't treat any of these numbers as firm numbers. These numbers vary. They vary by the topic area. So some program directors might have a cycle where they fund much more than 15%. In some cycles, depending on proposal incoming quality, they might be funding much less than 15%. So these are just overall numbers for the program. So all the proposals are being reviewed for two critical aspects, your technical merits and your commercial merits. Let's go a little more into that. So we invite experts from academia as well as industry. We also might have people who have significant business experience, investment experience. So the review panels usually have a group of multifaceted individuals so that each proposal gets a comprehensive all-round review. We focus on disruptive, discontinuous, transformative technologies which have significant societal impact. Typically, the proposals will focus on new markets, on new submarkets, novel products, enabling platform technologies, applications. In all these cases, we're looking for a strong commercialization focus and a well-thought-out vision to profitability and growth. Companies submitting to NSF should have a customer base that they will feed into down the road, because NSF doesn't really license any technology or buy or procure anything. So the customer is outside NSF. And it's very important that submitters bring a strong business case to their technical innovation that they want to get funded. Now, what we typically will not fund is evolutionary optimization of existing products and processes. You're trying to broaden or modify the scope of your existing product. You're adding new feature sets to it, incremental innovation, market studies, market research, routine design, routine engineering design, routine process development, things like that we would not consider for funding, because on a relative basis, we will have proposals that fit the criteria on the top end of the slide, and there's really no capacity for us to support anything but that overall profile of proposals, which are outside the evolutionary optimization incremental innovation space. So on the technical side of the review, and keep in mind, in the room we will have reviewers who are both technical and commercial reviewers, and many reviewers will have a combination of expertise. They may have been deep domain technical people who moved on to commercial activity, so they sort of bring a holistic set of skills to the table. So we will be looking for a qualified technical team, access to resources, your work should reflect the state of the art, and should demonstrate commercial feasibility from a technical standpoint. On the commercial side, we'll be looking for societal benefits, the strength of the business team, the competitive advantage in the marketplace, would it be an enabling technology in some significant way, and more importantly, will your company have the capacity down the road to attract funding from non-SBIR sources and other sources of financing? So you really have to give us a sense that you can get to that place with NSF support. This is my last slide, and then I have some other general information to share. In terms of the application timeline, if you were to submit for the June deadline, the merit review process typically takes between July and September. We will be making award decisions in the October-November time frame. And if you get to the point of actually receiving an award, you would probably hear in December, November or December from NSF about your award. If your proposal has been declined, we will try to send you that notification well in advance of the next solicitation submission deadline so that you have some reaction time to review the feedback and act upon it and perhaps even modify your proposal and resubmit. All applicants will receive detailed feedback, and most importantly, all the reviewer and panel comments shared with NSF will be shared with you verbatim. So you get to see exactly what advice NSF has got from the reviewer community. We have on this slide compiled a list of all the agencies that have a significant focus on environmental technologies. The agencies are listed and the key contacts at those agencies are listed, so please don't hesitate to reach out to them. Coming out of this webinar, if you have ideas, get the conversation going. I think that is a very critical step. Call or send write to them. I think writing to program directors is always a good idea, because it gives them something concrete to act upon, and they can send you some written feedback right away. Voicemail would be okay, but keep your message short, succinct, and follow that up with an email. In this day and age, email is a lot more efficient for everyone, and easier to get back to you with some concrete information. Okay, so. If we were to try to distill all the points that the speakers have made today, here's our top 10. So contact the program official before applying. And we can't reiterate that enough. Get the discussion started early. Even if the solicitation is not open, that's not a problem. Just talk to them. Try to get the conversation going. Get some initial feedback. Start your registration process and get all the required registrations done well in advance, even before you start writing a proposal. Just get it done. Submit your application before the deadline. Try not to cut it too fine, because with NSF, if you submit even a minute late, we will reject it. We have a hard stop when it comes to the deadline time. Please read the solicitation announcement cover to cover at least twice. Make sure you understand all the terminologies and all the nuances, and when in doubt, again, ask the question, write to a program officer. In terms of your team, you must try to assemble a strong team. It is important for you to share your strengths, your weaknesses, what you know you don't have, and how you're going to address those gaps. A complete, comprehensive view is important to share. the more the funding agency understands that you understand your strengths and limitations and you have a pathway to address the limitations, it puts you in a stronger position. Anticipate questions about your proposal in advance. Once you write your proposal, have it have somebody else, have an advisor maybe kick the tires on it and critically evaluate your proposal. Your proposal is your only mechanism to tell your story to the agency because that's what speaks for you in the review process. So make sure your proposal is articulating what it is you really want to articulate. And keep it simple, keep the language simple, don't get too technical. Try to explain what it is you're doing. Reviewers come from a mixed community, some technical, some commercial. Make sure the commercial reviewers can understand what it is that you're trying to do. If you're resubmitting, make sure you have captured the essence of the feedback that has been provided to you. Don't just address the feedback point for point. It's more important for you to take the feedback, digest it, think about it holistically, and how does it help you put your best foot forward in your next submission. That's the key thing that you should do. Again, different agencies are different, but it's probably not a good idea to use up a lot of proposal page space merely rebutting previous reviewers' comments because the next reviewer team may be totally different and they may never be the same people reviewing your proposal. So just please keep that in mind. Also remember that all the agencies covered in this webinar, NIEHS, SRP, EPA, and NSF, we're really funding catalysts. We're trying to fund great ideas. We're trying to help you succeed. But you must never consider us as your customers. We're not your customers. Your customers are outside the walls of these agencies, and you really need to motivate that part of your story just as well as you motivate the technical part of your story. At this time, I'll turn it back to Kirsten, and we can go to the Q&A.
Great. Thank you, Prakash. Actually, before we go to the Q&A, we just want to review a couple of things real quick. First, I wanted to show you a chart that we have as part of our resources. This chart will actually show you all three agencies that presented today, and it kind of compares and contrasts the three programs as a quick cheat sheet. Before we open the question and answer session, I want to make sure everyone is aware of the related URLs pod, which contains the seminar resources and seminar feedback links. On the seminar resources page, we have assembled resources directly applicable to today's topic. This will stay with the seminar indefinitely, so you can access it after the presentation. We typically place these seminars in an archive with the soundtrack, so in the near future, you will be able to access the slides and hear the presentation as it was given today. Also in the related URLs pod, you'll find an online seminar feedback form. We ask that you consider filling out the online feedback form. We do look at your comments as we continue to try to improve the content and delivery mechanisms. Links to the seminar resources and the seminar feedback form can also be found on the last slide of the presentation. I would like to remind all of our participants today of the various ways to stay connected to ensure you don't miss any webinars. For more information on EPA's Clu-In webinars, please refer to the Clu-In org website, EPA Cleanup Tech's Facebook page, EPA Cleanup Tech on Twitter, and Cleanup Information Network group on LinkedIn. I will now open the question and answer session. Let's go to the phone lines first. If you would like to ask a question, please take your phone off mute by pressing #6, state your name and organization, and ask your question. You can then remute your phone by pressing *6. Do we have any questions on the phone? Again, that's #6 to unmute. If we don't have any questions, we can start with the we'll start with the online questions. Go ahead.
I have a question. Hello?
Sure. Yep.
Hello. This is Josh Pellerin with Pellerin Water Solutions. I know very early on in the presentation that there was some discussion about any type of petroleum application any type of technology related to petroleum industries would not be applicable for funding. We're in the produced water treatment business, and what we do is, as we treat water, when the all water and gas comes out of the ground, we extract the residual hydrocarbon, and we treat the water down below 10 parts per million, which will allow for reuse of water that's being used in fracking at a frack location, but we also discharge water overboard in the Gulf of Mexico as well. So we're currently working with a few of the different governmental agencies, specifically DOE at this point in time, on that technology, and so that's how I became aware of what you guys were hosting today. But I just want to confirm, if it's oil and gas related, and even though it pertains to water and water treatment, it's still not a viable option for any type of funding opportunities on R&D.
Thanks for your question. This is Heather Henry from the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences Superfund Research Program, and I imagine you're talking about the disclaimer that we have for petroleum, and you are correct. For that type of application, it would not be relevant for a Superfund SBIR grant, but I will let April and Prakash jump in because that may not be the case for their research programs. And thank you for that question.
This is April with EPA, and we do pretty specific topics, but they change every year. So it would just depend on whether we had that topic in our solicitation that year. And then I think Prakash has a separate answer, so I'll let him respond as well.
Thank you, April. My suggestion would be, as far as NSF is concerned, as I said before, we are open to all ideas, so you really have to motivate the why question. Why would someone care about your technology? What is innovative about your technology? What's the breakthrough that people achieve by doing the work? So I would recommend sending a two-page executive summary to me.
Yes, sir.
And I'd be happy to give you some feedback based on that.
Yeah, that certainly would be greatly appreciated. Just to let you know, we're working with Secretary Moniz as well as Mr. Robert Diamond from the White House as well on this particular technology. And again, that's how we became aware of today's call, and they thought that it would be, which it was, extremely valuable for us to participate and listen in. So I appreciate the insight and commentary that each one of you offered. And thank you for doing such a great job of giving this presentation. And as you advise, I'll follow up with that one pager.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Are there any other callers on the phone who would like to ask a question? If so, please press #6 to unmute your phone. Okay. I think we're going to go to the online questions, but someone on the phone has a question. We'll come back to you in a few minutes just to make sure that you don't have any questions. So our first question on NSF STTR principal investigators. Every STTR program except NSF appears to allow the PI to be employed by an entity other than the company submitting the proposal. Why does NSF require the PI to be a company employee?
I assume this question relates to the PI of a small business.
Every STTR. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. NSF believes that the PI should be primarily employed by the small business. This is an NSF requirement in our solicitations, and it is not something that is negotiable relative to submitters. It has been that way at NSF all along, and we have made it very explicit in our solicitations that that is the case. Philosophically, we believe shows a high level of commitment on the part of the small business in terms of devoting a person who's primarily employed to the project. Primary employment and participation in the project are slightly different things. I want you to be absolutely sure you understand that. Primary employment by the small business is when you're 51% or more employed by the small business. Your participation in the STTR award can be much less than that 51%. So you could have some of your time on the STTR award and the rest of your time on other company business. But the critical requirement is that you are employed by the company 51% or more of your time on a weekly basis, and we treat a work week as a 40-hour work week. So if you are employed elsewhere, more than 49% of a regular work week, you would be in violation of that requirement. So it's important to keep that in mind as you structure your organizational resource goals towards supporting projects.
Thanks, Prakash. Our next question, my company can eliminate agricultural runoff. Do I qualify?
Could I take that?
Sure.
Okay. As far as NSF is concerned, the first question we would ask you is, who cares about your idea? And how are you going to make a business out of it? How are you going to create jobs? How are you going to generate money and revenues? You really have to motivate the business side to ask yourself the question, who cares about my idea? How do I have product market fit if I actually developed a product? Because the agency is not going to be your customer. So that would be NSF's response.
Okay. Did April or Heather, did you want to add anything, or are you aligned with Prakash's answer?
This is April. I would just echo the idea that if it's even close to our topic areas and you want to know whether we welcome that proposal, just give me a call and we can discuss whether I think it aligns well enough with our topics. And exactly, and ditto what Prakash said, we want the commercial thought to have gone into it as well.
And then from the NIEHS perspective, I would say that would probably be a stretch for a Superfund research, and unless I saw more information, I would probably say no. But if I saw more information, I would understand better. In general, agricultural runoff is not something that is going to be relevant to Superfund.
Thanks, Heather. Our next question: are there any past examples of award recipients?
So this is Heather. On my title slide, we have a list of our current grantees. If you go to that link, you will also find a link to our past grantees. And that's for NIEHS, Superfund.
April, would you like to go next? I'll follow you.
Sure. I mean, sort of same for us. I think within the presentation, there was a link to our most recent set of awards. If you go to the EPA SBIR website, there's several places where you can link to awards, either a big list or by topic, and they're all linked off of our homepage.
Yes, on the NSF website, if you go to nsf.gov, right on that main page, top left corner, you will find a link which says awards. And under awards, there will be search awards. If you simply search for the term SBIR, you will automatically get a lot of past awards that have been made, phase one and phase two. And then you can browse through that and try to get a sense for what has been funded.
This is April. If I can say one more thing. Also, if you go to sbir.gov, which is actually the portal for all of the SBIR programs, you can search what every agency has funded by topic, by agency. So there's a huge database of projects there.
Great, thank you. So our next question, when a company receives an award, is there some type of auditing program from the group that has given the award?
Could I take that?
Sure. Yes, please.
Okay. I just want to clarify the use of the word audit. So we, NSF provides grants to the fixed price awards. So we require certifications on the part of the small business. So you are telling us that you certify to, or you confirm specific aspects of your submission are true, and the use of the funds has been towards execution of your R&D activities as funded by NSF. So we go significantly based on your word, your statements, and that is a firm basis of our audit process. But if we have a situation where someone says something and we get wind of the fact that there is some issue, we might follow up and have further conversations. And in a few rare cases, there might be an investigation. We don't have formal audits for phase one companies. That's a short answer. When you submit your final report for phase one, again, you will be attesting to the fact that you've spent all the money on the work that you said you would do. And we don't ask for receipts and detailed information at that stage. But if there's an issue later on, then we'd be asking for all of that. So we basically request anyone who submits to NSF should plan, and I think this holds for any agency, just make sure that you keep careful, diligent records of how you spend the money so that if questions come up later, you can clearly point out to how you used federal funds to get the work done. For phase two submitters, we have a process where we do evaluate the financial capabilities of your company and make an assessment as to whether your company is financially capable of executing the proposed work if NSF were to make a funding award. There is plenty of information on the NSF website that you can explore to learn more. And if you have specific questions on that front, please send me an email and I can help direct you to the right resources. Thank you.
April or Heather, did you want to add anything?
I thought Prakash's answer was excellent.
I agree. And there are many nuances and levels to the auditing process. And I have to admit, it's not handled on my side of the SBIR. It's handled on the grants management side of SBIR. But I think Prakash answered the question adequately from the point of view of NIH as well.
Our next question is for EPA. When will the solicitation open in May? When will the new topics be released?
We are targeting middle of May, and the solicitation will be open for 45 days.
Great. Our next question, how are the technical peer reviewers selected?
This is Heather. From the NIH perspective, we have scientific review officers who are completely independent from me and my program branch, and they look at the expertise. They look at the applications. They see what kind of expertise is needed, and they contact experts in the field. And they may be academics or small business owners themselves.
So for EPA, we have a whole division that just sets up the peer review panels, and we work very closely with them. So again, for each topic, there'll be experts, both commercial and technical experts in that area, so for water or for air or for manufacturing. And basically, that division has a big database of people, and they match expertise to the topics and try to get a well-rounded panel, diverse in different ways, but with the expertise in that specific topic.
Yeah, at NSF, we use similar approaches. We have an internal list of all people who have first of all served in the past as reviewers across the entire foundation, so we can draw on their expertise. They select into the system in terms of what their expertise areas are, so that's usually one way to try to drill down to who might be a good fit for a proposal. The position to invite reviewers is done by the program director, so we typically look through your proposal and try to get a sense for which key technical areas need to be covered in the review process. So we then reach out and put together a custom panel for each cycle. So the proposals are clustered by topics. So for instance, we might have 15 to 20 proposals in the wastewater treatment space. So then based on what's in the proposals, we will assign four to six reviewers, but no less than three reviewers for each proposal. And the specific reviewers that are assigned to that specific proposal will depend on what's in that proposal. So it's a painstaking process to find the right reviewer community that can provide a comprehensive and balanced view of the proposal. So that's the process. We will reach out to the academic community. We will reach out to people out there in the industry based on information that we can find that is publicly available. And we will also reach out to people who have in the past provided quality reviews, balanced reviews, and unbiased reviews, people who have already served at the National Science Foundation. Now, if any of you on this webinar has deep domain technical expertise or has rich expertise in specific business areas and would like to volunteer your time to serve on a review panel, then you're welcome to send me your CV. And we'll certainly keep you in mind as opportunities come up in the future. That's one terrific way to get involved. And I'm sure you could reach out to the other agencies and try to get a sense for whether your background might be relevant to their review panels.
Absolutely. Thanks for bringing that up, Prakash. That is true for the Superfund research program, and they're always looking for great reviewers.
Yeah, same for EPA, and a great way to learn the process and see it from the other side of the table, how you look at proposals and how you compare them and what stands out. So we would welcome any good CVs as well.
Great, thank you. Our next question is a little more specific. Our question comes from John Laslett, and he represents a California-based habitat restoration firm. One of their divisions is a native plant nursery. A pertinent topic in their field at the moment is pathogen control and the production of nursery stock for restoration in sensitive habitats where surrounding natural areas might be impacted by pathogen introduction. There is a growing commercial demand for proven technologies in this regard. Is this a topic of interest to any of the funding agencies here today?
This is for the Superfund research program. That in and of itself does not sound like a good fit. I don't know about EPA or NSF, but USDA does have an SBIR program, and that might be a place to look. But I'll pass it off to April and Prakash.
April, would you like to go next, and I'll follow you?
Sure. We'll go in order. It does sound a little bit of a stretch for EPA as well. Again, it depends on our topics, and I guess I'd need to discuss it a little more. I think Department of Agriculture is a great recommendation.
Yeah, so again, there's definitely a place for an idea like this at, within the NSF spectrum. I would encourage you to provide a two-page executive summary for additional feedback. And please make sure that in that summary, you emphasize the business case. How are you going to make money off this idea, in addition to describing your innovation and your and the novelty of what it is you're trying to do? It's very important to not just present a technical idea without the supporting business case.
Our next question, can you tell me, for the SBIR federal agencies, do they pretty much have the same guidelines, or do they differ from agency to agency?
It might be good to clarify what kinds of guidelines are being referred to.
Yeah, if that individual could maybe submit another question and maybe be a little more specific.
But eligibility is pretty much the same across agencies if it is an eligibility question. And SBIR.gov, again, it's a good place to start. They have an FAQ section, and there's one eligibility that really helps answer the general questions of whether you're eligible for SBIR or not.
Yes, and just to follow up on what April said, if you read the published solicitation from any of the agencies, just take the time to do it. I know it, you know, it's not as exciting as reading the front page of the newspaper, but nevertheless, read it cover to cover once at least. Make copious notes. I'm confident that a lot of your questions will already have been answered in the solicitation document or in the links in the solicitation document. Now, if you've spent an inordinate amount of time and you think you're going to end up spending too much time trying to find the answer, we're all just a mouse click away. Send us a quick email, and we'll get that question answered for you, or we'll at least point you in the right direction.
Our next question for NSF, when you say $150,000 for SBIR for 6 months, is the grant distributed over that period or in one lump sum?
Why don't we go in order?
it was specifically for NSF.
Oh, NSF, okay, all right. With NSF, the phase one award is two-thirds, one-third. So it's $150,000. When you get the award letter, there'll be specific instructions on how you can request your first payment, which would be for $100,000 for an SBIR. And for the SDTR, again, it's the same distribution. The payment is made electronically and typically within 7 to 10 days. The rest of the payment is made available to you after you have submitted a final report on your program once you've completed it, and the final report has been read and approved by the program director, and then the program director at NSF will request the final payment be made. Again, once that request has been made, NSF will process that request, and you will receive the money electronically in 7 to 10 days, typically.
Our next question. If I receive funding under EPA, does that exclude me from NIH or NSF funding?
This is April. I can start that one. The big rule with SBIR is that you're welcome to submit multiple proposals to different agencies. The big no-no, obviously, is getting funded for the same work from different agencies. That's a big no-no. There's no reason why you couldn't submit an NSF proposal on one topic and get funded and then submit a different topic, different type of project to EPA and get funded, as long as the projects are not duplicative. But you definitely cannot get funded for the same work from different agencies.
Yes, and I agree. And then I would say that there's also a negotiation process that's involved. Sometimes, you have a grant that's submitted, and there is one aspect of that work that is being covered under an EPA application, and you don't know at the time that you submit to NIEHS that what's going to be funded and what isn't. So we try to manage all of those things on the back end. But as April said, you absolutely cannot get paid for the same work from different agencies.
Yeah, and if I just want to add one more point, in addition to what's been said about duplicate funding, we at NSF, if you submit a proposal, we will be asking you if you have any other pending proposals with other agencies, and we'll also be asking you if there's overlapping research between your NSF proposal and the other proposals, and if there is indeed overlap, NSF takes a very conservative view when it comes to overlap, and will basically recommend to you that you should make a choice on whether you want to withdraw your NSF proposal and keep the other proposal in place, or make a different determination, because we do not go through a process where we will allow you to modify your R&D program so that you can remove that overlap, and it's just too complicated for us, and it's very hard for us to enforce. So we take a conservative view to overlap, and that's typically how we handle it. Duplicate funding is pretty straightforward to do, but we do have an opportunity before you receive your award where we give you an opportunity to have a discussion with us and tell us about potential overlaps potential for duplicative funding, and we'll work it out before NSF will take the next step of making an award.
Our next question, it's really looking for advice from the three agencies today. What if you're a team of entrepreneurs, there's no current DUNS number, but they're looking to form a new company around addressing, commercializing one of these topics? What would be your advice for getting started?
Yeah, we at NSF, we would encourage you to go ahead and submit a proposal. And, your company obviously has to exist at the time you submit the proposal, because there will be a cover sheet document on the proposal, which will ask you to certify to a key question, which says, the small business certifies that it is a small business as defined in the solicitation. So your business must already have been created and must exist. However, if there is, for instance, a DUNS number that is still not available, we will allow you to submit without the DUNS number, so long as you have all that information, if your proposal is being considered for award, because we would not make an award without having all the information on file. So we're willing to give startups an opportunity to submit their ideas, because we would hate for you to have to waste 6 additional months to get all those issues sorted out and lose your competitive advantage and time to market. So again, this is a webinar with a lot of people, so I don't want to give a very generic response that attempts to solve the problem on the phone. My suggestion is, please write to the program director at NSF or the other agencies and try to get a specific determination on your situation.
Heather and April, I'm just confirming that you're still with me on the phone.
I hope so.
I am.
I am.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah, I just don't have a lot to add to that.
Yeah, neither did I. Is Kirsten still on the call?
Oh, sorry, I was muted.
Okay.
So is there any questions from any of the phone respondents? Nope. Okay, so we'll go to our next question. Is there a budget by agency specifically for environmental technologies for 2015?
So this is Heather Henry from Superfund Research Program, and we do have our federally mandated budgets described specifically by our subcommittee appropriation staff through Congress. And that level for 2015 was, as it was listed on the slide, $1.7 million for the environmental technologies. So that's both the detection technologies and remediation technologies.
And this is April Richards. I also mentioned, I think all of our topics are environmental topics. Our entire budget does go to support environmental technologies. And this year, our budget is $4.2 million. Talk to Prakash for the bigger budget numbers.
Thank you. As I mentioned, we don't have a specific budget allocation for a topic area. So we have our overall number, which is anticipated at $177 million. But how that gets spent across the topics is a function of what we receive. We have 9 program directors. We have $177 million roughly. So if you do some quick math there, you might get a sense for what might go into any topic area. But again, don't assume that. It can be higher or lower depending on what we receive.
Our next question is for Heather. It's about the NIH. So do we contact a program director if we have a novel, new, and relevant idea that is not on the NIH list of proposal topics?
Yes, absolutely. And I get this question all the time. I get abstracts, one-pagers, two-pagers on a daily basis, and I would be happy to look at your idea and let you know how well that fits. And I know that April and Prakash will say the same thing, too, but absolutely they should send it to me.
Great. Which program, SBIR versus STTR, has a better chance of being awarded at NSF or NIEHS?
Heather, why don't you go ahead and I'll follow up.
Okay, sure. Through NIH, it varies from year to year. Just looking at the numbers, more money is allocated towards the SBIR than the STTR process. So that would certainly be one way to intellectually make a decision. But I will say that it varies from year to year. And that's all I have. Prakash?
Yeah, I agree with that. I just wanted to mention that within the pool of STTR applicants or within the pool of SBIR applicants, the allocation of the budget and the partners to bring to the table, all that is viewed within that pool. But keep in mind that in choosing whether you should submit as an SBIR or STTR, there are a few things to keep in mind as you make that overall decision, because this question comes up very often. You know, which is a better structure? SBIR allows your company to spend a minimum of 2/3 of the budget and all the way to 100% of the budget within the small business. So you can only outsource or bring in external technical help, and that help could be in various forms, consultants, it could be in a university or other nonprofit institution, or another for-profit institution. But the outsourced technical work can't exceed 1/3 of the budget. Now, with STTR, you can have as little as 40% of the budget within your company and as much as 60% that goes to external entities. Of course, one of those external entities has to be a nonprofit institution, a university, a research institution, and they have to have at least 30% of the budget. So you have some discretionary funds, 30%, which could involve a consultant, which could involve another external third party. So STTR versus SBIR gives you some flexibility in how you want to structure how the money gets effectively used to get the job done. So look at it from that standpoint. STTR often gets used in situations where there is some intellectual property that is with the research institution. So a university might have some really good patents, and they'd like to see it commercialized, but the university doesn't want to become a business, so they partner with you, the small business. You help do the technology translation work. Along the way, you might get some rights to the technology. And so the STTR requires that at the time of award, in fact, prior to the award, you must have something called a cooperative research agreement that is in place that clearly delineates how the technology that is owned by the research institution participates in the STTR submission or the STTR work. So just keep that in mind. There's a budget distribution question. STTR, you can go as much as 60% outsourced. SBIR, you can't outsource more than 1/3. STTR is an institutional, it's a partnership with an institution. STTRs often have longer time frames associated with them and some proportionately greater amount of money. NSF has 225 for STTR and 150K for SBIR, but STTR is 1 year, SBIR is half a year. So keep that overall parameters in mind as you try to figure out which way you want to go.
Okay, so our next question. If a Phase 1 proposal is conducted successfully, and then the Phase 2 proposal is submitted, and the reviews are good, but ultimately it's not funded due to various reasons, are there any suggested means for continuing SBIR, STTR funding? What is this individual's options?
Within the National Institute of Health, we allow a resubmission of a Phase 2. So that applicant would certainly...
Can't hear her.
Critique. I'm sorry?
Heather, we can't hear you.
Heather, you're a little faint.
I'm not on mute. You still can't hear me?
That's better.
Okay. The applicant, I would recommend to look at their summary statement, which is the critique of the review in writing. It was the strengths and weaknesses found by the reviewers. And at least as far as NIH is concerned, you can resubmit your Phase 2 application once you fix those issues that come up. If you're unsuccessful at that point, I think it's good to contact your program administrator. There might be other opportunities at other institutes, and that's always a possibility.
Yeah, in contrast, EPA does not allow resubmittals of Phase 2. You can either, unfortunately, start again with Phase 1. I don't know if any of the agencies here participate, but there is now an option that companies can submit Phase 2s to other agencies if they are participating agencies. So there's just the thought that you could get your proposal funded at a different agency for Phase 2. Prakash?
Yeah. Let me first cover Phase 1. Phase 1, if you get a decline notice from NSF, you will have an opportunity to resubmit the proposal at the next solicitation deadline. So there is no way for us to have the proposal being reconsidered under the same solicitation. Now for Phase 2, proposals that are declined, they do have a specific mechanism that is laid out in the NSF policy manual, which allows you to submit your proposal for reconsideration. So as in you're asking NSF to reconsider the declined decision. And you can present a very comprehensive case after reviewing the reviewer commentary, which will be provided to you verbatim. So after you receive the reviewer feedback, you can then submit a document to NSF requesting that your proposal be reconsidered for funding. NSF has an independent internal review process that will not involve the program director, and it allows you to have your case heard out carefully, and then NSF will communicate a decision back to you, but that decision is final. So we do have a mechanism after Phase 2, but not for Phase 1.
Okay. Our next question, is the water reuse and hydrofracturing considered an environmental protection topic, or is it excluded from all three, from all of these three grant programs?
So, you know, maybe I'll just answer this for all three of us because I think we've touched on this a little bit. So, fracturing, in general terms, is not going to be a part of an SRP. Superfund Research Program, NIEHS, SBIR grant. And that person is, I mean, they can send me information, but we are excluded from doing petroleum-related research. April Richards mentioned for EPA's perspective that topics are specifically listed, and it just depends from year to year. There may be a year where the fracturing-related water pollution cleanup is listed. And then I believe we've heard Prakash mention a few times, why do we care, why do we need this? So the main driver, if it's okay for me to say on his behalf, is more of that, hey, this is a really innovative technology, and I'm going to convince reviewers that this is important. Is that?
That's perfect, yeah.
Okay.
Yep, I agree, perfect.
Our next question, what should a company do if their product seems like it fits under several different agencies?
Well, my suggestion would be to talk to the program directors at the respective agencies and share your idea. And as April mentioned before, it's perfectly fine to submit more than one proposal to, so you can submit a proposal to EPA, you might submit the same proposal to someone else, but you can only be funded for that proposal from one agency. So just keep that in mind. Now, I would strongly urge you not to submit numerous duplicate proposals, because it just clogs the system up, and it creates it's really not a good use of reviewers' time and everyone else's time to be looking at the same proposal in totally different agencies. So my recommendation to you would be to have a conversation with a few agencies, and then just pick one, because the review processes are pretty transparent and fair, and I'm pretty confident that you'll get a good assessment, and then you can go from there.
This is April. I just have one thing to add. If this happens to work for you, there's a national SBIR conference in June in Washington, D.C., and there's also a road tour of SBIR program managers right now. They're going to different states all over the country for different weeks this year. So if it just happens that any of those events are in your area, you can go talk to every program manager from all 11 agencies at one time, if you really feel like SBIR is a good fit, but you just can't figure out what to do. And there's a lot more information on that on the road tour and the national conference, again, on the SBIR.gov website.
That's great information. Our next question, does it make a difference if clients and supporters of a technology are outside of the U.S.?
I think that's fine. Your customers could be from anywhere. The important thing is that you meet the qualifications as being enough of your business within, or your company needs to be registered, 50% within the U.S.
I just want to mention that, just second that, all of you are working in a potentially globalized economy, and your customer could come from anywhere. But it's important to keep in mind that 100% of all the funds that you receive as an awardee under the SBIR program, 100% of it has to be spent within the United States on U.S. soil. So you cannot execute some of the project overseas or, you know, in a foreign country. So please keep that in mind. That is a very specific requirement, and that cannot be violated as part of the SBIR policy.
Our next question. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, absolutely, I agree with the precaution, Heather.
Thanks, April. Our next question, do the agencies have any service-disabled, veteran-owned business goals?
That sounds like a question for contracts. As Prakash mentioned, and behalf of all the others of us, we are not customers of the products that are being developed. So there is no angle like that that can be used in disfavor for a small business applying, unfortunately. Not for the kind of grant program that NIEHS has.
Yeah, this is April. Similar for us, and for I think for all of SBIR, there's no preference given to any different organizations based on hub zone or disadvantaged or woman-owned. We do track all that information, and we care. We like to do a lot of outreach to those businesses, and we'd love to fund them, but there is no real preference that we can give to any of those organizations.
Yes, I would like to support that. We do not use criteria like that to make funding decisions. We might keep track of things for statistical purposes, but ultimately the funding decision is driven by the strength of your ideas, your technology, the strength of the commercial case, the business case that you present, and the high risk, high societal impact aspects of your technology, of your proposal. So all other factors are secondary. And, you know, we would not specifically say we make an award just because of one of those types of reasons. So, and again, you're welcome to discuss specifics with any of the program directors, any program manager, any agency, and try to get specific feedback on your questions.
Our next question, when submitting an application and ideas to the independent merit review panel, are there safeguards in place to ensure against competitive compromise? In other words, how do we know who is on the panel and if they are possible competitors?
May I begin, folks?
Please.
Okay. First of all, rest assured that the SBIR program goes to great lengths to protect your interests as a submitter, which means we have specific conflict of interest requirements that all reviewers will have to sign documents stating that they do not have a conflict of interest relative to proposals. And these are serious legal documents, and which means if we discover down the road that there is a problem, people will be liable for not being truthful. So all reviewers are required to fill these legal documents out. Also, if somebody comes to a panel and discloses that they have a conflict of interest, they will not play any role whatsoever on that specific proposal, which means they will not participate in the discussions. They will not have access to feedback that other people are giving on that specific proposal. And this ensures that they have no way of influencing the overall discussion that is ongoing on a specific proposal. So you can be assured that your proposal's confidentiality is of great importance to all agencies, and there are a lot of checks and balances in place, which I can't go into on this webinar, but rest assured there are lots of checks and balances in place to make sure that the small business submitting proprietary ideas is protected. There are also mechanisms by which you can clearly mark parts of your proposal that are proprietary. And that sort of detailed information will be in the specific solicitations from specific agencies.
We have a similar process at NIH. Thanks, Prakash.
Yeah, same with EPA. It's very important to us. We have the same, very similar controls in place to protect peer review and throughout the process.
Okay, our next question, are there any sources to look at an example proposal and feedback?
We don't have like a mock application online.
Yeah, this is a common question that does come up. There is no sample document that can be shared. But keep in mind that the published solicitation will lay out what the overall structure of your proposal should be. And so going beyond that, it's really your ideas that are going to fill out that proposal. So don't be too concerned about the fact that you may have never have written a proposal before, that you may have never submitted a proposal to a specific agency. Do not be concerned about that. It's more important that you can communicate your ideas transparently in a manner that people can understand why you're doing it, what you're doing, and who cares, and how you're going to get it done. So that needs to come through. Just want to give you a statistic. We've been looking at our awards that we've been making over the last few fiscal years, and a very high proportion of the phase one awards that we have been making are to brand new startups and companies that have never received any federal government funding whatsoever. So these are first timers. This is their first proposal. And so I hope that gives you a sense of comfort that if you have a good idea, the proposal writing skill is not going to stand in the way between you and potential funding.
Well answered, Prakash. I guess for EPA, the same thing. We're really looking for the good idea. We're really trying to get beyond just a well-written proposal and look for a good idea. So we don't release old proposals either because people kind of copy that idea and then they think, oh, I did it just like the example and why didn't I get funded? So we don't like to do that. So and we don't. But again, try to try to do your best to convey your energy and your thoughts and your hard work and your proposal, and hopefully that will get you through the review process.
Okay, so we have 3 minutes left to take questions, and we'll keep going through them, but I just wanted to let everyone know that at 3 o'clock we will be stopping, but that the questions will be given to all three agencies, and they will answer them offline. And also for anyone who wasn't able to join the full presentation today, a link will go out with a recording. So we'll just keep going on with our questions for a few more minutes here. This question is to Heather. Is there still an opportunity to suggest a topic for this SBIR round?
So the application needs to be submitted on April 5th. Because April 5th is a Sunday, it's actually due close of business on Monday, April the 6th. So, I mean, I'm if your application can be put together in that period of time, it's not too late. You don't need to have submitted a letter or get any permission from me. The solicitation is open, and if you can get it in by close of business, and you have all of your prior registrations done, then it's conceivable you could get it in by the April 6th submission.
Heather, this is April. I don't know if I heard the question right, but I thought the question said, can they submit an idea for the solicitation? I don't know if that meant like a topic idea. Did I hear that question correctly?
I think I got the same sense.
Yeah. Like, would you accept ideas for
your... Could you repeat the question, Kirsten?
And it's hard to hear you again, Heather. Sorry, you're fading out.
Kirsten, she was asking you to repeat the question.
Yeah, I think it got deleted already.
Oh, okay, all right. But I think if the question was, can we submit a idea for a topic? Of course. Yeah, you that's exactly what we want to know, because it can clearly become part of a future solicitation as another seed for submissions. These are, you know, in a lot of cases for us, it is a conversation starter. So the more conversation starters we have, the more likely we can find great ideas that can be funded. So please don't hesitate to look through the solicitation with a critical mind and say, this solicitation seems to have a big black hole in this space, which is not covered, which is an emerging space, which has tremendous societal value and needs to be on the NSF or the other agency's radar. Don't hesitate to send us a note. We need that feedback.
Okay, so it's 3 o'clock now. So I think we're going to conclude our question and answer session. If you have additional questions, you can contact the presenters via email. And also, we do have a lot of questions still remaining in the queue, and we will answer the presenters will answer these offline. So just to remind you, the presenters' email addresses are on the seminar homepage on CLUIN, which is linked to from the webinar webpage. If you submitted an online question, we did not have time to get to it, it will be forwarded to the presenters. I would like to thank our presenters, Heather Henry, April Richards, and Prakash Ballin, for their time preparing and for sharing their presentations with us today. And I'd also like to thank Jean Ballant and Justin Crane, who have provided exceptional logistical support for our webinar today.